Hey, welcome to the Film Podcast. I'm Ricardo.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Brandon.
Fucking asshole, dude. Why can't you one time just be in sync with us, dude?
Because you're always
out of sync.
Because I was responding to our missing partner here, Adam Scott, who can't be with us, telling him, hey, sorry you can't make it. If you can come back, please do.
Yeah.
And drop back in.
Yeah.
So
we'll play some fibbage.
Yeah. Sorry for being a generous human being. Who's showing gratitude and
you're an asshole?
Sympathy for their friend who's dealing with
and
something.
You're not a scholar. all right.
Scholar.
Well, now that we figured that out, thank God we figured that out. Today we're talking about our favorite or best opening scenes to a film.
Well, the best is
what
our
favorites
are.
Oh, wait, we're not doing the worst?
Well, we could.
I'm just kidding.
I know. I was going with it. You could have kept going with it.
I didn't know what else to say. That was
it. I volleyed
it
to you. I volleyed it to you, and you just let it go by.
I'm not an improv person.
I'm
a no and.
That was a low key volley.
like we said, Adam's gone today. He hulked out and just stormed off.
Shout out to Time Warner Cable.
Yeah. Thanks, assholes.
Ooh.
Who we don't want as sponsors.
Ooh.
No. Although, if they called, you would say yes.
No, I would say no. I would say, fix my internet speed, then we'll talk about it. Dick faces.
Really? They're like, man, we love your show. We want to sponsor you for, like, I don't know, what's the CPM on this? Like, $3,000 an episode?
Oh.
Okay. If they made my show like that show on, what's it called? The show that Kelly was on.
The show?
Yeah.
Oh.
Day Trippin'.
This is Day Trippin'. This is Kelly, my wife, who was interviewed at the zoo for a show called Day Trippin', it was a Time Warner show. That's
yeah.
right. It was like
it was
on their
the Page Museum.
Crap
the
on demand thing. Oh, the Page
yeah.
Museum. Okay.
So if you could find
Day Trippin'.
Time Warner has like its own programming channel, right? Where they
I guess.
I missed that show.
And it's called Day Trippin'. Day Trippin'.
Trippin'.
You say you missed that show as in like you're wistful about Day Trippin'?
Yeah.
Or you missed
we follow the
it.
Guy
and
on
you're,
on Twitter.
Your
He's
wife,
hilarious.
Your wife is on what episode? The Natural History Museum?
The Page Museum.
Page
the
Museum.
La Brea Tar Pits.
His name Kyle?
Tim?
No, I
don't know.
Jerry.
Shout out to Tim. We could probably get him on the show and then he could tell us about it, about
He's
his experience
cool.
with Time Warner.
Sure.
All right. So today we're talking again about our favorite opening scenes. I talk about movies I see in theaters, but I feel like we're really close to doing our top 10 of the year that I've only watched things that are probably going to be in my top 10 lately.
Mm.
I've been catching up on screeners. So I think we'll skip it. Unless you guys want to talk about any like holiday films you guys watched in the theaters.
I mean, just the
in
usuals.
The theaters? What was there? What holiday
the
movies were there?
Jenny watched Into the Woods.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Jealous.
You shouldn't
are you?
Be.
Yeah.
I love the musical Into the Woods. I love the show, but it kind of like didn't hold up to what I remember it being. Like it was, I remember like going out of the show and being so pumped that I saw it and like wanting to sing all the songs. And then after the movie, I kind of was a little like, eh, that's what that was. I mean, it wasn't as bad as Les Mis. And some of the
See,
people.
I liked Les Mis.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Some of the people were good, but. I didn't like Johnny Depp, and I thought Meryl Streep wasn't a very good choice, and yeah.
Yeah, I saw it. I wasn't a fan either. Boring.
But I mean, it was
I
fine.
Don't care about
I
your
like
opinion
the story.
About a musical,
I still
though.
Like the story.
Hey, I'll give credit where credit's due with musicals.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I've told you. I like Singing in the Rain. I like Guys and Dolls, and I kind of like Chicago a little bit.
But why do you like Guys and Dolls?
Guys and Dolls?
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think I like it?
I don't know, because like the mob thing?
Yeah. yeah. Damn it. All right, you saw it through me. Okay.
There's a lot of crime bros holding hands.
yeah. all right, so I saw The Gambler, which I enjoyed. It was different than what I thought it was going to be. It was written by William Monahan. He did The Departed, and it was good. It was different. It was also the director of Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Rupert Wyatt.
Oh, Rupert Wyatt?
Yeah, he directed
Also, it. The Escape Artist. Did you ever see The Escape Artist?
No.
That was his first movie, or maybe not his first movie, but Brian Cox?
No.
Oh,
good?
Yeah. Really? You would dig it.
I'll watch it.
Yeah. It's about a prison escape.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's really good.
Oh, he's British, right?
Yeah.
British director, yeah. So I enjoyed it. I'll probably see it again when it's in like my local 3 hour theater, because that was a little inebriated when I saw it.
It's a good Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. It's good with him. It's good despite the fact that he's in it. But if they would have gotten like a Mark Ruffalo or somebody, oh man, that would have been a really good movie. But yeah.
Did we ever review Big Eyes?
No, we didn't. But we could now.
Yeah.
Big Eyes, directed by Tim Burton, and I think written by the guys that did Ed Wood.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. Everybody was great in it. I think you liked it as well, right?
I did. I liked it a lot. It was a really interesting story. It's a true story, right?
Yeah, about the artist that wrote that painted those paintings with the mm-hmm. kids with the big eyes,
and her husband took the credit for them.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was really interesting. I love behind the scenes of artists, so.
Yeah.
It was good. I liked it a lot.
I liked it. The only thing is, was it me or did it feel like a little bit, like, Lifetime-ish? Like, it wasn't, like.
Yeah, it definitely didn't have a Tim Burton feel at all.
Yeah, which I don't mind. I don't mind.
At this point, that's good.
Yeah, No, it's good. But it did nothing with it. It wasn't cinematic at all. It felt like you could have shown this a Lifetime, and I would be like, oh,
okay,
good try, guys. Good. The only thing that saved it was that the actors were so good. You know, you had like Jason Schwartzman playing like supporting,
Gallery.
Yeah, supporting characters. Danny Houston playing like this reporter. You had a lot of really cool supporting characters, and on top of the fact that you have Christoph Waltz and Amy Adams,
yeah.
But I enjoyed it. I would say. That's the thing, that it's not cinematic, so I wouldn't say go see it in theaters, but it's a movie you should definitely check out.
Yeah,
you should check out.
It was cool.
Yeah.
An interesting story, if anything.
Yeah, yeah, totally. All right, what else did I see? I saw Night at the Museum, the last one. It was okay. I mean, it's just like all the rest. I also saw Top 5, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I need to see that one.
I don't know if it'll make my top 10, but it was good.
Mm.
And then the last movie I saw was Exodus, and yeah, I wish I could have walked out, but I fell asleep.
Yeah, what'd you think of Exodus? Because you were the biggest defender of Exodus.
I know. I wish I could time travel and go.
You mean like after every Ridley Scott movie for the past 10 years?
Dude, don't remind me.
Sorry. I love him too.
Damn Ridley Scott. I didn't see The Counselor, so.
Ooh.
It was rough.
It was. I didn't even finish it.
Ugh.
I just couldn't get. I, which is unfair of me. I should watch the whole thing.
Yeah. All right.
But I think I also stopped it because it was on HBO Go, and I realized it was in the wrong aspect ratio. I got really mad, so then I stopped it. I was like, I'll watch it.
Only like true film nerds would get that upset. They'd be like, "Fuck this aspect ratio! I'm not watching this movie."
What do you mean? It was in full screen?
No, they just they.
Oh, warped it.
Yeah, they blow it up a little bit on HBO Go.
Got it.
It's zoomed a little bit.
Yeah,
You can just tell everything's a little too close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done that. Where I'm like, I really want to see this, but I'm going to wait. Yeah.
Sometimes it bothers me more than other times for some reason.
Yeah, like I guess maybe it depends on the movie.
Yeah.
It depends on the format that they filmed it in. Was it anamorphic? That they, you know, like it's
sometimes
a lot of
I
variables.
Feel like I need to go through and find the setting on my remote. And
yeah.
Be like, let me just figure this out.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'm like, it doesn't matter that much to me.
But I just, there's no reason. I don't understand.
And you know what the worst thing in the world is? Especially
what is it? It's what they're doing to The Wire.
Mm.
Which was specifically shot 4:3
for
televisions at the time. And then they kept it for the specific reason of making it feel more like kind of a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And so now what they have to, and because it was shot on film, they can make it widescreen.
Yeah.
But they have to go in and like digital, like it's so much work for nothing. They have to go in and like digitally paint out like people on the set, like tea stand. Like they have to remove all the shit that they kept outside of the frame because they knew that they were only shooting, you know, the center.
Yeah.
So they didn't worry about other stuff. And so they have to go in and remove all that.
Yeah. But here's the worst thing, especially with holiday parties. When you go to somebody's house and they have the True Motion on their TVs.
Yeah.
Or smooth motion, it's as it's called in some other TVs.
I had to do that at my mom's house.
And
what is that?
It's like
It's 120 kilohertz. They run the video at 120 kilohertz. So
it's like the Lord of the Rings movie?
Yes.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So everything is way too smooth. They do it at work, but I can't change the TV at work, and it infuriates me every time I walk back to where the TV is, and I see, like, what was it? Today, I think they were watching Winter Soldier. And, like, and the Avengers. Like, the Avengers in the morning, and, like, everything was just too smooth, and, like, it looks like a newscast.
You have to get at the right time and then kind of change it when nobody's in the room. And then,
yeah.
And then,
yeah, no one's there on Tuesday afternoon. I should just go back there and switch it and see what it
is. And no one
says.
Will notice it. People will be like, oh, something different. And then you're like, oh, is it the DVD quality is different.
But people actually prefer it.
Yeah, that's what I hate. But anyway, that's just an anger thing. That
hey,
we
who would you argue with progress?
Yeah, we should, but all right. So again, we're talking about Fever opening scenes. Who wants to go first? If not, I'll go. I don't give a shit.
I'll go first.
Okay. What do you got?
All right. So for my number five, I went with a... Oh, I don't have any of the years. I just realized.
It's okay.
I think it's... I'm pretty sure it's mid-90s. And I went with the opening scene of Scream.
Nice. Honorable mention? Yeah.
I figured someone would have that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us how it opens up.
It's with Drew Barrymore and her blonde bob and white shirt. White
she
sweater.
Brought the bob back on, didn't she, for a while? Like, everyone
I
was
think
like,
so, yeah. And she's at home alone and she gets a weird call and it's a wrong number. And then they keep calling back and saying, but let's talk. And tell
she's
me about
popcorn.
She's making popcorn because she's about to watch a scary movie. And so he wants to know what her favorite scary movie is. And then he accidentally says something like, because I can see you right now, or I just want to know what I'm looking at, or something along the lines of seeing her. And she gets really freaked out and then, like, locks all the doors. And then he keeps calling back and he says, don't hang up on me again, bitch.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy. And then her boyfriend gets gutted in front of her by the pool because she gets the question wrong.
Yeah.
Who's the killer in Friday the 13th?
And she says...
Jason.
Jason, and it's not Jason.
It's his mom.
Ugh.
And then her parents are, like, right there, but she can't scream. Because he hurt her vocal cords.
I liked the scene because, well, also this movie kind of brought back like the horror genre. It had been kind of missing for a while. And this was a movie that kind of opened up the gates for a lot of the 90s like horror movies.
Well, it was the first, I feel like I'm going to be ignorant for saying it just because I don't really know horror. I'm not a horror guy. But it was the first like successful deconstruction.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he did New Nightmare, but that really doesn't work.
That was meta.
Much. Yeah.
It was crazy.
But it didn't really. But it, as meta as Scream is, but it just didn't. Yeah. It just didn't really work the way Scream did.
And also, like this opened the door for like I know what you did last summer, and it's 10 sequels.
Unfortunately,
and, part one isn't as bad as I thought it was. It's bad, but it's not as bad as I thought it was.
Yeah.
But yeah. So
all the Screams have really good opening acts.
They do
actually.
They
but
do.
This one's the best, mostly because this one's the most iconic. It's been done all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been parodied a million times, and that's why it's so important, I think.
Yeah,
and in itself is trying to be psycho,
and the fact that like it's, I remember everybody thought like, oh, Drew Barrymore's in this whole movie, and then like,
I know, yeah, that's like, what they showed you in the trailer.
Yeah.
They showed her, and then she's like, just that scene. That's
and you're like,
did anyone really think that though?
I thought so. I'm like, oh, cool.
Really?
Yeah,
you really remember like.
I remember thinking like, yeah, cool, Drew Barrymore.
Okay,
I think she's hot.
Well, she's on the cover too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
They tricked you.
Okay.
Yeah, that they was, do trick you.
Because
I feel like
they
this,
got you.
That feels like the argument of like when T2 came out, everyone already knew that Arnold was a good Terminator.
But no. This one.
I think it's like a Bryan Cranston in Godzilla.
Yeah.
Everyone thought Bryan Cranston was in the whole movie.
That's why people went to go see it, and then they tricked you.
I didn't
because
really,
Drew Barrymore
like,
was like a big name back then, still. So that's why I think. Nev Campbell was nobody. Nobody knew who Nev Campbell was.
Party of Five?
I mean, like a small handful of people. Sorry, but no.
Well, everyone knew that show. Like, I didn't watch the show, but everyone I knew watched that show.
I think this helped Nev Campbell, though, become a bigger star.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't think she was that big. I don't think people were going to see it for Nev Campbell.
Sure.
I was there for Nev Campbell.
Okay.
I was there for Skeet Ulrich.
Yeah.
It'd be like
Lars's brother.
Yeah.
What would today's relevant, like Leighton Meester, if it was Leighton Meester or something like
Leighton
that.
Leighton Meester.
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 Meester. Meester.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah.
But you know who else was Skeet was supposed to be like the next James Dean, remember? Like yeah. they were trying to push him and then like he went nowhere. He went straight to Jericho.
Name, like, Skeet. Yeah. Yeah. The only thing I remember about Skeet Ulrich is the picture of him that's above Satan's bed in South Park.
Yeah.
The movie.
Oh my god.
Matthew Lillard is in this.
Yeah.
Matthew Lillard is great.
Yeah.
I miss Matthew Lillard.
He's underrated.
He's super underrated. Because he's in like Scooby Doo.
Yeah. Everyone doesn't give him
And She's All That.
But he was good in.
But he's good in She's All That. And I know. SLC Punk, he's awesome.
Oh, yeah. He's good in really good
that show, The Bridge on FX.
Oh, I never saw that. He's really good.
Yeah. And he directed a movie that's supposed to be okay. Like Diary of a Fat Kid or something. Or Fat Kid
Diary
Rules
of a Wimpy
World.
Kid?
No. Like Fat Kids Rule the World.
Alexander the Terrible, No Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day.
One of those. All right. So what is your number five?
Me?
Yes.
Man, this was a hard one.
That's what she said.
Because there's so many or they're not enough?
Because there's so many.
Oh.
Just give us one. Come on.
I just wanted to... All right. I'm saying this one only because the opening scene is better than anything else in the movie because it comes out of nowhere, and that's Way of the Gun.
Oh, yeah.
The opening scene when Ryan Phillippe and Benicio Del Toro are sitting on the car. It's Sarah Silverman.
Wait.
What?
I love this movie. Not just the opening. I love this whole movie.
Really?
Yeah.
The movie doesn't really work for me at all.
It works for me.
I remember just being really disappointed by the movie, but the opening scene comes out of nowhere.
Have you seen this, Jenny?
No.
Oh, you would like this because it's Sarah Silverman.
Can we cut in? I'm going to do an edit point right here. We cut in. Just,
hold on.
Because you can hear the dialogue of the scene tells itself.
Hey. Yeah, you. Get up. What are you, retarded? Get off the fucking car. Hey, Dickless, get off the fucking car! Hey, fucksuck, get your slippery fucking ass off the car! Listen to me, get off the fucking car with your fucking ass!
Shut that cunt's mouth or I'll come over there and fuck start her head.
Because my boyfriend's gonna fuck you up. And then after that, while he's fucking up your fucking gay uncle over there, I'm gonna fucking cut off your cock and mail it to your mother, you fucking faggot bitch. Gaylord fucking bitch. How do you like that? You like that a lot? You fucking faggot? You like to ass fuck? Fontanella fucking baby head fuck? You like to fuck baby heads? You like to fuck boys? He's gonna fuck you in the ass. How do you like that? He's not even gay, but he'll do it just
honey,
to fuck.
Honey, she's got a big mouth, but she's not kidding. I'm gonna whip you silly, and I'm gonna fuck you stupid. You wanna do the man dance? First dance is yours.
Anyway.
But it's Benicio Del Toro. Ryan Phillippe. Which
a vanilla head baby fuck.
He's straight out doing like a really young Al Pacino impression. He's doing Al Pacino from
Ryan Phillippe.
Yeah, if you notice, he's got the Godfather Part One like little like lisp to him. He's straight out doing it.
Okay, and he's
admitted
to
it.
He always kind of has a lisp though.
Yeah, but I think he's admitted to the fact that he just straight up like kind of emulating that character.
Well, that's fine. I just remember the movie. I haven't seen it in forever, but I remember the rest of the movie not really living up to the promise of the opening scene.
I enjoyed it.
That it was kind of a by the numbers thing. I remember because it was Macquarie's second thing after Usual Suspects.
Yeah.
So like you can only go down, right?
I once went to a Q&A. This was for Valkyrie, and he talked about that. He's like with Usual Suspects, I couldn't get away from people.
Yeah, and it's not his fault. He does another crime thing. There's no way to avoid it.
Yeah. And he's like when Way the Gun opened, he's like I knew. It was bad because he's like at the premiere and no one was standing next to me.
And he's a director.
Yeah. But hey, he eventually did Jack Reacher and he redeemed himself because it was.
And he's doing Mission Impossible 5.
Yeah. All right. Great opening. Man,
yeah. As far as openings go.
Yeah. It's a great one. And it's funny and it says a lot about the characters. And yeah.
And it's also like by today's standards. People may not cotton to it very well. There's a lot of retardeds, women get hit. It's pretty much everything that gets people talking on Twitter happens in the scene.
Talking about babies.
Yeah, but it was 1997.
Yeah. I like the part in the middle of the movie where they're trying to donate sperm. And he's like, tell me something about yourself. He's like, Benicio Del Toro's like, I've never killed a man. And he's like, why would you tell me that? He's like, isn't that a question you ask? He's like, no. He's like, I think it's very important that you should ask. All right, my number five. What's a two-way tie? But I don't want to do that yet because you guys might have it on your list. But I'll go with 2000. Oh man, I'm having a hard time saying 2002. Narc, Joe Carnahan's Narc. It opens up, and he's chasing one of the drug dealers, and it's like, it was the first time, like, we had seen him before, but that whole shaky cam thing, like, he kind of was the guy who was responsible for it. And it's really handheld. It's going through like this alley, out through an apartment, into another apartment, and it's all one long take. And it ends up with the drug dealer holding the pregnant mom hostage. And Jason Patrick is undercover. Do you remember this scene?
I haven't seen Narc since 2002.
Oh, well, he's holding a syringe. The drug dealer's holding a syringe to this pregnant lady's throat, and you know, Jason Patrick is undercover. He's a cop, and he decides to shoot him, and he shoots him, but I think he shoots her, but there's blood everywhere. Like, he accidentally gets her, and it's pretty bloody, and it's pretty intense, and it's definitely set the tone for the movie, and it was pretty crazy when I first saw it. It blew my mind away. You saw this. Didn't we take you to see this?
Yeah.
But you didn't like the movie overall, did you?
No, I did.
You liked it?
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. But I'm upset that it's not on Blu-ray.
It isn't?
No.
Wow, that surprises me.
Yeah.
Because it looks incredible.
Yeah, it does. I tweeted it the other day. And then he just retweeted it, but didn't do anything.
Joe Carnahan?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But he didn't say anything. Like, the studio listened to this guy.
Well, no, he's probably like, hey, look, someone liked it.
Someone liked it. This is one douchebag.
No, a lot of people like Narc.
But yeah, that's my number five, Narc. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's really cool. It's with Ray Liotta, Jason Patrick, and, Busta Rhymes is in this. I forgot about this.
I forgot that too.
Yeah. But check it out. It's a good crime drama. Jenny, what is your number four?
All right. So my number four. Also a 90s, The Lion King.
That was what I was trying to decide on my number five. Do I go with Way of the Gun or Lion King? So thank you.
There you go. Yeah, no problem.
I don't remember this. What is this opening?
So it opens up with the sun coming up over the Sahara Desert. And then it's Circle of Life.
You don't remember The Lion King?
I don't remember the beginning.
It's all these animals running and all this beautiful work that every time I see it, I'm like, I need every single one of those as posters on one of my walls.
It's gorgeous.
All these animals are coming up to the big mountain, and then Mufasa with his beautiful hair in the wind is standing there and then nods at the parrot. I can't remember his name. I want to say
Iago.
Iago. Okay. I always get him and the parrot from Aladdin mixed up.
What is the parrot's
name? Maybe that one's a Iago.
That might be a Iago.
Yeah.
Iago's from Aladdin. Yeah.
See? That's the problem.
See?
I can't get him.
Jafar's parrot is Iago.
Yes.
And I don't know. I didn't even know there was a parrot in Lion King.
The blue guy.
Yeah. I don't remember what his name is either. Anyway.
But yeah. And then. Huh?
What is it?
Zazu.
Zazu.
And then. Now I can't remember the monkey's name.
Rafiki. That I remember.
Holds up baby Simba.
I remember now.
Baby kitty.
And it's a circle of life.
That's right.
It's a circle of life.
It's the scene that like feels like it should play at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Because it feels so final. Like it's so great. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Like this is another one I feel like, and I love The Lion King. Like 100% love The Lion King, but nothing else matches that opening.
Yeah.
For like beauty. Like
it's really cinematic for being animation.
And especially for that time, that was the first time that they did in Beauty and the Beast, but like blending the CG with the hand-drawn animation to just kind of build out the world. Like there's that awesome shot that's like the rack focus shot of the ants on the tree.
Yeah.
And then goes to the zebra stampede.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so great. It's beautiful.
I gotta rewatch this. I haven't seen it since it came out.
Yeah, we could watch at least the opening scene.
I had to get my DVD, my Blu-ray out because I couldn't find like half of the opening scenes I wanted to find on YouTube. So I had to go through all my DVDs and like find them.
Ugh,
it was such pain in the neck. No,
you're inserting DVDs but into like a device.
I'm pretty sure Michelle has it seven years ago.
Yeah, she does.
We'll put it on after this because it's really good. It literally brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah, it's really, really beautiful.
That's how good it is.
And the song's really good.
Yeah.
I should check out the Blu-ray because I wonder how it looks. It probably looks
sure
really
gorgeous.
Nice.
Yeah. It is. It's nice. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I think we have it. I think I just saw it yesterday. I saw the
box. We have
box.
The same Disney movies, so
yeah.
You have to have it.
I didn't tell you. Remind me to tell you something about Disney movies, the Blu-rays.
All right, don't tell anybody on the podcast.
Don't tell. Well, I'll tell them in the
podcast.
Why don't
you just say it right now?
I'll tell you it right now. for every Disney Blu-ray you buy, you get points. Mm-hmm. There's rewards points.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I finally cashed in all my. I made an account online. I had
they
enough points.
They don't expire?
No, I had enough points to get a Toy Story on Blu-ray.
For free. Really?
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Oh, I wonder if I threw any of
what's
those
that, like 10 points?
No, it was 2,000. Oh, to buy the Lion King?
Well, like...
I'm sorry, to buy the Toy Story?
What's the point value of like one Blu-ray?
Oh, one Blu-ray equals 150 points for the most part. And then I think I spent 1,700 for Toy Story 1 on Blu-ray.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
it's like...
But it has to be Disney, no Pixar.
Yeah. Well, some Pixar have it too.
Because it's Disney Pixar.
Yeah, yeah. But it has to be a new release
Blu-ray. So it's like you buy 12, get one free?
Basically, yeah. But I mean, like, you would not think of that. I wouldn't have thought of that. But Michelle got some new Disney movies. I was looking at the cover. I'm like, my rewards? What the fuck is this?
Yeah, it's like Marlboro Miles. You just throw those packs away.
That your digital copies
expire.
Do expire.
Yes.
And I didn't know that. And so I have a shit ton of digital copies that all expired.
Yeah, because they put them back in the vault.
Yeah.
So you have to buy them again. Like an
that's
asshole.
That's ridiculous.
In 10 years.
My Bridesmaids digital copy expired. So I can't ever watch Bridesmaids on my iPad.
Yeah. See.
Well, you can.
I'm the king of like.
First
as soon as
problems.
I buy the Blu-ray, I you get my digital copy.
Also, you totally can watch it on your iPad.
I bought it though. I should get to watch it on my own stuff
no,
that I buy.
Yeah, but you can take matters in your own hands.
I will. You take that, Paul Feig. Feige. How do you say
yep,
his name?
His decision.
Yeah. I know.
You said it right.
That bastard.
He's such a jerk.
Ugh, we didn't even talk about his Ghostbusters thing.
Ugh. Let's talk about it later.
Okay.
Okay, so what is your number four, Brandon?
Number four is continuing the Disney trend, is 2000, I'm going to guess, 8.
Okay.
Up.
Ah, okay, I'll take that one off.
Yeah.
It was on my list, but yeah.
I figured someone else would have it.
I still haven't seen it.
You haven't seen
You've
Up?
You've never seen Up?
No.
I think we've talked about this.
I remember I told you Wally upset me so much that I didn't want to see anything else.
Oh my God, Wally's amazing too.
I hate
Wally.
Wally
also has an amazing opening sequence.
Hated it.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
But Ups is by far one of the best opening sequences.
Up is hilarious, tragic, set like it is an entire movie in 5 minutes.
It's Tim Young, right? I think I've seen the opening at least.
Tim Young.
The young version of the old man, right?
Him Young.
Yeah, Him Young.
Him.
Sorry. Yeah,
his
it's
name
Carl.
Is Kim
yeah.
or him?
Carl. It's Carl. Carl and Ellie.
Yeah.
I
think I have.
And it just, this is another one I couldn't find anywhere to watch because I wanted to rewatch it.
Oh, I rewatched it. I found it easily.
I couldn't find it on YouTube.
Yeah, you do up opening scene.
Right, but they don't actually start from the beginning. They start from a different point. They don't start from the very beginning.
They start from pretty much the beginning.
Kind of. All I wanted to see the very beginning. I was very specific.
Okay.
And I don't own Up.
Well,
so.
Disney's very litigious, so that's probably why they don't do
that. Yeah.
But no, it's amazing. It sets up all the motivation for the entire movie, the entire character of Carl, his entire life, everything in 5 minutes. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's an amazing piece of filmmaking.
It is.
All right.
It makes you cry.
It's like people talk about like running times are too long. Mm-hmm. Like this 5 minutes, everything.
Really?
It's a masterclass.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I might check it out, but I've seen the opening, so I feel like I'm done with this.
And the score, it wouldn't be nothing without the score. Michael Giacchino.
I like
it's amazing.
Is it me or is he becoming the new John Williams? He's like doing everything big.
He's like the new. See, John Williams. Okay, here's John Williams was great.
Yeah,
but he only ever did Spielberg stuff.
That's true.
Which like a lot of those are super iconic.
Yeah,
and he's amazing. And like, but you know, you got guys like Jerry Goldsmith, who did way many more movies and scores that you love, and he was like I would call him the new Jerry Goldsmith.
What's his name? Silvestri?
Alan Silvestri.
He's
good
too.
There's another one. Yeah. I mean, Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
Hans Zimmer. Yeah, I like him too.
Yeah.
He's crazy.
Of course. He's German.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course.
I'm assuming because of Hans.
That's why I'm saying. Yeah. All right. So Up is your number four.
Up is my number four.
All right. I'm down with it. I'm down with Up. Maybe.
It's the second time you've done something like that, and I won't accept a third.
My number four is another movie. Oh, what a coincidence. From 2002. It is called Punch Drunk Love.
Ooh.
What's that opening sequence?
I don't remember the opening.
The opening sequence is him finding the little, like, not piano, but it's a little thing with, like it's almost like a piano. I don't know what it's called.
Oh, it's not an accordion. It's a...
Like a piano accordion kind of thing.
I know. It's... Oh, a zi... No. It's a something a phone.
A vuvuzela.
No.
No. Wrong thing. But you know what I'm talking about. And he sees it on the street. Somebody drop it off. And then he goes and he takes it and then he sees that car flip over. You guys remember that? And it's in the valley.
Flip over?
Yeah, there's a truck coming and then it just flips over and it freaks the shit out of him. And it's
concertina.
Really loud. Yes. That. And it's so simple and it's like
what a pirate would play.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. But it's more like a piano though. Because it isn't in the air. You have to, it's like a little table.
Yeah.
But it's really cool. It's really simple.
So it's not a concertina.
Yeah. And it looks really cool because it's so simple and right away you know you're not watching an Adam Sandler movie, you're watching a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Mm-hmm. You know? Like a lot of people you should check out the new trailer for the new Thomas McCarthy movie called The Cobbler. Because right away you think like, oh, I'm watching a stupid fucking Adam Sandler movie. But no, like, it's clearly a very different tone to those movies.
No, it's not.
Oh, I think so.
The Cobbler?
Yes.
He puts on other people's shoes and becomes them.
Yeah, but it doesn't have that kitschy, stupid Adam Sandler
feel. Oh my God, that's
to it.
All over the place.
No, I don't see it. I don't see it.
Really?
I see Thomas McCarthy. Yeah.
It's like a thing out of Tropic Thunder.
No.
It's like one of the trailers at the beginning of Tropic Thunder.
No, I don't see that.
He plays a cobbler and he puts on other people's shoes and becomes them.
No.
But like the metaphor
is
shooting you in the
tone.
Face.
Yes. Okay. The story feels like an Adam Sandler movie.
It is. That story feels so big. The tone at that point doesn't really matter.
No. I
because totally you're like, oh, this is another Adam Sandler thing.
You're
and I love Thomas McCarthy.
Thomas McCarthy's amazing.
Yeah, he's great.
So
I don't know what this shit is about.
Well, it's the same shit like Punch Drunk Love. We're gonna see a different side of Adam Sandler.
Mm.
Yeah, you wait. You wait, dude.
Now, if you were to argue with me right now about what the story is in Punch Drunk Love, like if you were to give me the log line of like, well, he meets a girl and he tries to save up, what's the thing he buys to save up the vacation?
He buys the pudding.
The pudding, yeah.
And the frozen foods.
Yeah. Even that, though, that feels right away sadder and less gimmicky than putting on his customer's shoes.
I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
Them.
I'll give you that. But it still doesn't have an Adam Sandler feel to it.
He becomes a woman.
No.
You know he touches his boobs.
Oh, you have to.
Yeah, it's an Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah, no, it's not. All right, but Punch Drunk Love, you definitely know it's not a...
You talking about The Cobbler sounds exactly like you talking about Exodus.
Whoa. Maybe.
So I'm excited to see what you think of The Cobbler.
I think it's going to be amazing.
Okay.
Eight. Really, Scott didn't write this one, okay?
He never writes them.
That's true. Okay, so Punch Drunk Love, check out. If you've been hesitant to watch this because of Adam Sandler,
go
see it.
It's one of the best movies ever.
It's one of the saddest movies.
Yeah, it's
and
really good.
Yet sad, yet really romantic.
It's super romantic.
Yeah.
And an amazing soundtrack.
Yeah.
I never knew, I think we talked about it in the Robin Williams one, but that He Needs Me, I never knew that was from Popeye.
Yeah, yeah. And another sad thing, Philip Seymour Hoffman's in this.
Yes.
In an amazing role.
Yeah.
The Mattress King.
Love him.
Love him. But yeah, it's this movie's like really tragically romantic. And funny at parts, but not in an Adam Sandler funny, in a Paul Thomas Anderson awkward funny.
Paul Thomas Anderson can be funny. Boogie Nights is hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that is my number four.
Okay. So my number three, I went with Inglourious Basterds.
Oh.
See, that was on my list. But the opening is like 25 minutes.
It's still the opening. Though.
I know. It's still the opening. Yeah. And no, I totally include it. But I'm just saying like it's that whole sequence. Because it's... I mean, the movie's broken up into chapters, basically.
This is your number what? Three.
Three.
Okay. I had a two-way Tarantino tie, so let's just
God. Up. Well, okay. Don't even get me started on Tarantino movies. I had to rewatch every opening. I couldn't decide which Tarantino. I was like, I'm not going to do more than one Tarantino.
Well, let's talk about Let's talk about.
But every let's Tarantino.
All, let's just get them all out of the way. Yeah, because they all have.
Does anybody else have? Any
I did. My number three was was Reservoir Dogs.
I didn't include him because I knew someone else
somebody
would.
Have him.
And Kill Bill. I think Kill Bill is a much better than Reservoir Dogs. But let's talk about it. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. All right.
First, let's talk about Inglourious Bastards.
All right. This is the first time we're ever seeing Christoph Waltz. Ever.
Ever. Yeah.
Ever. Like, nobody's seen him in anything.
Well, people who have seen foreign films have seen
him. Right. I had... This is the first... Okay. The first, time
American,
I've seen
American audiences. Yes.
You're German, you've seen him.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And he's walking up to a house who he's going on a Jew search.
Yeah.
And walking up to...
As they call them.
Is that, is that the best way to say it?
Going on a Jew search.
That'd be a good, like...
Look, I'm not going to use the right terminology here. Yeah, let's just say that.
It's an old Nazi spiritual.
His name is the Jew Hunter. That's his name.
Yeah, Jew Hunt. Okay. Yeah. He's going on a Jew Hunt.
Yeah. And...
We got to re... Damn it, I smelled it. We got to recut the beginning and just have, like, going on a Jew Hunt. As he's walking up to the house, driving up.
And it's this little house, right?
Yeah, in the middle of nowhere.
In the middle of nowhere. The middle of the French countryside.
Yeah.
And he goes and he talks to this farmer.
Gentleman?
Yeah. And the scene, how long would you say the scene is?
It's probably 10 minutes total, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's long.
It feels long because it's also... That's why it's also good, because it sets you up. I mean, the movie is basically like five conversations.
Yeah.
the entire movie is like five or six
and then a
conversations.
Shootout.
Yeah. And then a shootout every once in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and so everything is just so tense. It's so fucking tense.
Yeah.
Ugh. Well, he's literally just waiting for him to say the one wrong thing that will completely trip him up. And that's what's so like stressful and amazing about it. Mm-hmm. Is he's just like waiting for him to like trick him into telling him.
It's a little things like asking for the, you know, always, you know, I see the cow, you know, do you have, you know, might I have a glass of cold milk, like stuff like that. I've run to the end of my French, you know, do you mind if we speak English?
And then the pipe that he smokes.
It's God.
Yeah. So it goes from French to English to kind of absurd with the pipe because it's so huge. But it's,
and that's like his way of like kind of disrespecting the house to a degree to see how he would react. Because doesn't he like empty it just like straight on the table?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And had you gone to the whole Tarantino catalog by this point when you saw this movie?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would always surprise me if someone said, no, this was our first Tarantino movie.
Really?
I mean,
it would surprise me, yeah.
Even if it is.
Yeah, it's a crazy...
You would get it, though.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you would... If you saw this and then other things, you'd be like, oh, yeah, this feels like Tarantino. The Tarantino I know from Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah. And this is... he kind of has a trend. It's either really talky or really cinematic, his openings. And these are the talky ones. This one and, like, Reservoir Dogs are both the really
all
talky
about
ones.
The
it's still cinematic,
monologue.
Though.
Yeah. But I'll talk about the next one later. But let's keep talking about Inglourious Basterds, because there's so much going on. Like, there's so much stuff. Like, you're getting a POV from like the floor up.
Well, that's what I mean. Like when it goes down into the floor.
Yeah, and you see who's hiding underneath, and it's really intense. It is. I forgot how intense it is because you're like, oh man, I know there's someone hiding in here. Like, fuck, how's he gonna find out?
Yeah,
and then you're like, dude, this guy's like one of the best detectives. Like he would have, he'd be a good Sherlock Holmes.
He's just doing his job.
Yeah,
well, he's more like Columbo. Like, he's just shy of saying like, oh, sorry, one more thing. Like,
just one more thing.
Anytime I think of somebody, one of the Nazis looking for Jews, I always think of the Family Guy episode where he's up in the attic with Anne Frank, and they're all like being really quiet, and then he eats some chips, and then they find him. Cracks me up every time.
You think
because it's black and white, and he's eating chips. That's hilarious.
So every time you think of World War II, you're like
Family Griffin.
Peter Griffin. Oh my god, just being an asshole.
One asshole.
So that's a good opening. But so let's now talk about.
Oh, and then it ends with them shooting up the ground.
Yeah, yeah, and
the floor of the house
and Shoshana running out and with blood on her face. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that part.
Shoshana.
Oh yeah. I forgot that was her.
Yeah, she's a really good actress.
Melanie Laurent.
Yeah. She was in Beginners, I think, with Hugh McGregor. Did you see that movie?
I didn't actually. I really wanted to.
I did see that.
I think for some reason at the time, everyone who saw it said it was amazing, but that it's so sad.
It is, but it's so good.
So effectively sad.
Yeah.
And I just think at the time, I was like, oh.
Gotta be in the right mood.
Yeah. Too soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? I don't know.
I don't know for what, but too soon. So we should talk about Reservoir Dogs and Kill Bill, and that'll take care of my number three. Right. So Reservoir Dogs is a different kind of talkie because it's more like hey, just dudes hanging out before they go pull a heist. But it was the first time we got to hear Tarantino's, I guess we had heard his stuff in True Romance, but anyway.
We didn't know it.
Yeah, we didn't know it, yeah. But this was just literally a bunch of dudes talking, and it was really interesting because the topics went everywhere. Like, and everyone was having their own conversation, yet everything demanded your attention, if that makes any sense. Like they're talking about Madonna, about like a virgin, and then the boss.
It's just all bullshitting.
Jimmy Choo?
Yeah.
Jimmy Chan.
Jimmy Choo? Yeah. Jimmy Wong.
Jimmy Wong.
It's the thing that he does best where it really just feels like it's guys bullshitting.
Yeah.
But it's super iconic at the same time.
Yeah.
Like something makes it really distinctive to make it last.
Yeah.
But it still just feels like guys shooting the shit.
Which is funny because, I think Pulp Fiction is like one of my least favorite Tarantino movies. I like all the rest
so much.
But
that's
but that's so iconic. Like that movie's so iconic, but
that's like saying which part of the pig is your least favorite.
That's true.
It's all gold.
That's all gold. Yeah.
You'll have
it's all delicious.
It. Yeah, it's all delicious.
Yeah, yeah. And last I'll bring up Kill Bill because that's a crazy opening.
I would say Kill Bill Volume 2 is the better opening for me.
I can't remember how the
wedding.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. See, no, part one for me because I'm not expecting that that's how the movie starts, you know,
right.
and it's in black and white, and all you see is Bill's boots, and then the blood spattered bride and just a close up on her face,
and then the Bill handkerchief,
yeah, and then it says Bill, and then he cleans the blood, and you're like, why? It's so specific. The handkerchief is so specific.
And then right before
the
credits start going.
Yeah.
What she says and with the sound and everything.
It was so loud. I remember it being so. I'm like, I was not expecting it to be this violent.
Yeah. It's your.
Bang. Bam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it was a tough movie.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the Volume 2 opening works better in retrospect.
Yeah.
Because you know what happens. Yeah. But it's the same thing because it's so fucking tense.
Yeah.
Because you know what's about to happen. So then when she goes out and actually talks and you see David Carradine, for the first time. And what's Samuel Jackson's name?
I forgot.
Terrence, he's the man.
Yeah. but one, because see, here's the thing is that Volume 1 and 2 are one movie.
Yeah. And I saw that.
Yeah.
When they did that.
How did they do that?
That's a part I feel like it opened like Volume 2 does.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm interested to see this.
I know. I hope they do it again. Now they took over the New Beverly again. I hope he shows it again.
Wait, what's he going to do?
What are you talking about? Volume 1 and 2 put together the way originally was intended.
Yeah.
Because originally it was one movie.
They mix them up?
When he showed it at Cannes.
Originally
it was.
But it was one followed by two, or they were just mixed up?
It's
put together. It's
sequential.
One movie.
It still feels kind of the same, the same
back
sequence.
Back and forth, kind of.
Yeah, but there's some stuff that's different. And the anime sequence is longer. Just small things like that. But it's an awesome experience.
Oh,
and
cool.
He screened it at the New Beverly, which was the theater that at the time, he, owned but didn't control, and
now
he controls it. So I hope he plays it again because it would be good to see it again.
And it's called The Whole Bloody Affair.
The Whole Bloody Affair, yeah.
Ah,
it was released
cool.
on DVD in Japan as The Whole Bloody Affair.
Oh, but we should get
not here. I know we should. Do you have a region-free player?
I think the PS3s are. We'll find out.
Yeah, we should do it. Well, they even had a cool edition with like this like little Hattori Hanzo sword.
Oh, I have the Hattori Hanzo sword.
But like it came like in a collector's edition of the whole bloody affair.
Yeah, no, I just have the sword.
It was like a letter opener.
Yeah, that's what I have.
Oh, okay.
My friend was working at the Playboy Mansion and they had the release party. Uh-huh. And he swagged? He swiped.
That's why they call it swag.
He swiped. He swiped the swag. So that will conclude my number three. What is your number three, Brandon?
My number three, although I will just mention Jackie Brown also has an amazing opening.
Well, because it's just a single her shot. On the People Mover. One long take. Yeah. It was amazing. With the Bobby Womack song. Mm-hmm.
Okay, number three, I guess we could have done this when you did Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah.
But my number three is There'll Be Blood. And I'm considering everything up to the first spoken line of dialogue, which is him.
Oh, yeah.
From like 1898 through 1904.
Yeah.
And, I can't remember exactly.
Until the credits, I think. I think the title comes up.
No, the title comes up at the very beginning.
Really?
Yeah. The title comes up before anything.
Okay.
But his first line of dialogue is the monologue.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, in the house.
But yeah, I would consider that just the beginning of it.
Yeah, I would consider that whole thing the opening.
Yeah. It's amazing. Okay.
God, it's amazing. The whole movie could be that. And I would be enthralled.
I was talking to somebody recently and I was telling them that to me, like, if I had really. Not that it's my favorite movie. Well, it's like in my top five, that one, There Will Be Blood. But I think if someone said, what is a masterpiece? Give me an example of what you think a masterpiece film is.
Like, what are the elements in a masterpiece?
Yeah, I would go just watch There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
Like, that's a masterpiece.
It has everything.
I can't say that about... When we could debate this all day long, but I can't say that about Citizen Kane. I don't feel the same way I feel about There Will Be Blood, I don't feel about Citizen Kane.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
You know why? You're born 50 years after.
Probably, yeah.
Citizen Kane was a thing.
There Will Be Blood, to me, is like a perfect masterpiece film.
Yeah, I mean, everything. Every single element.
Yeah, music,
the score, cinematography, the design, the acting, yeah. Like everything. I feel like, and I watched, it's only because I watched a bunch of these up until this, is like the opening feels very Stanley Kubrick-ish, because that Greenwood score is that super like atonal, like major... Like chord, they're like, it's just that tone,
kind of
like Clockwork Orange, which is a runner up on my list,
yeah.
But that's like the opening shot of just, you know, of nature of that, and it just builds a tone. And then Daniel Day-Lewis, the first shot of him, you feel like he's been doing this for 10 years,
yeah,
like mining in the ground, like
by himself,
yeah. And it sets up everything, it's like Up, it sets up. Everything you need to know about him.
Yep.
Everything.
Yeah. What is there to say about this movie? It's a masterpiece.
It's done. Amazing. This is one of those movies where it's weird because it's super, like, it requires your attention a lot.
Yeah.
It's not something to necessarily have on in the background unless you've seen it a ton. But I don't think there's any point where this movie would come up where I wouldn't keep watching it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially the beginning.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, any part, really.
Yeah, but it like sucks you in. And I say Kubrick because it has that same effect of just sucking you in from the first moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn him. All right. That is your number three?
That is my number three.
Yeah. All right. So, Jenny, what is your number two?
Okay. So, my number two, speaking of long shots, Boogie Nights.
Back to P.T. Anderson.
Yeah.
A lot of P.T. in this list.
That is an amazing sequence.
It's amazing one long take.
Yeah.
It's really good.
In the disco, right? That's the Boogie Nights.
The club.
Opening?
Yeah, the club. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It starts off in Reseda, California.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a crane shot, and it follows the car, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it goes into the bar,
mm-hmm.
and then it introduces you to every character in one shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the outside into the inside to every character. Luis Guzman is funny and everything.
Yeah.
I love Luis Guzman. He looks like a Neanderthal, but he's an amazing actor.
He's an amazing dude, too.
Yeah, is he?
You know he lives like up in the hills in Vermont.
Really?
Like totally removed from everything. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool. Funny.
But it is such a good opening.
Mm-hmm.
And it sets up, again, like there Will Be Blood, it sets all the characters up.
Yeah.
And introduces you to who they are, what they do.
Everyone has like one or two lines.
Yeah.
But it's them.
Yeah.
And you know who they are.
Right away.
Right away.
Yeah. Damn it. Now I have to watch these openings.
Well, that's what, I mean, all of these opening scenes, all of them accomplish the exact same thing. introducing you 100% to the characters,
yeah,
whatever motivation they have, and also doing it in a way that is distinct, kind of, from the rest of the movie, so that it's memorable.
Yeah.
So that, like, you have that as a foundation to move forward.
And I would say this, you would maybe disagree because you had to weigh the gun, but I enjoyed it. I liked it.
I didn't hate it. Yeah.
But every movie that we've mentioned, like, literally has, like, a really perfectly written story. Like, story and character.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I see what you mean. There's no, like, weak links. Like, Lion King, perfectly written story and structure and, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost, like, by the book. But it's so by the book that it's like perfect.
But it's by its own book.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It never betrays itself.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And it's true to like you set up the character spines early on, and
that's probably retroactively what makes the opening scene so memorable, distinctive, and work so well.
Yeah,
is because it never betrays what it sets up.
Yeah, yeah.
So that it just follows through in a straight line. So your first interaction with it is the one you remember.
It's like the opening of Predator.
Shut the fuck up about goddamn Predator.
Oh my god.
All right. So that
the was the opening scene of Predator is not the greatest opening scene.
What, with them landing in the chopper?
I mean, it's fine.
It's amazing.
It's fine.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, the only thing you get is the
it sets everything up. It sets the relationship up.
It doesn't set everything up.
Carl Weathers is wearing a thick ass tie.
No, because Predator Predator is like From Dusk Till Dawn in that it starts off one thing and then becomes something totally different.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Still, Predator is the baddest movie.
Yes, it is.
Your number two was Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. Brandon, what do you got?
Okay, I'm nervous about this one because this movie is way overhyped. It's like consistently maybe number one in like the IMDb users top 250 or whatever.
He got game?
Because people are idiots and they can't see past 5 years ago. So I'm nervous about saying it.
Lord of the Rings.
But fuck, the opening is amazing.
Oh.
And well,
what if he had said Lord of the Rings? What if he had said Lord of the Rings? By the way.
I do love the opening to Lord of the Rings.
By the way, Michelle got the trilogy extended edition for Christmas.
Oh, I'm excited.
No, I'm not excited.
On Blu-ray?
Yes.
I haven't watched them on Blu-ray. I'll be borrowing those. Super excited. Or we're just going to have a marathon over here.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. We're going to do a marathon.
One whole day.
She can't hear me because she has headphones on right now in the background. Yeah. But if she could hear me, she'd be shaking her head. Yeah, marathon.
She's watching Arrow.
Anyway, but the opening is so good that they just took the opening and used it to sell the movie like 6 months earlier.
Oh, I know what movie
it is. So this is The Dark Knight.
Ah, yes. That's my number one.
That's great. Your number one?
Yeah.
We'll make it your number two.
The
I
opening,
already did my number two. Wait, I can do something else.
Yeah,
I
got
the opening is so good.
It's so good.
It's easily the best part of the movie. And I love the movie. The movie's great. It's just way overblown as to how great it is.
Yes.
Like, no one ever talks about what's wrong with the movie, which there's plenty wrong
with it.
There's
nothing
wrong with that movie.
There's plenty wrong with the movie.
But see, here's the thing is that it's the characters are so well built, especially the Joker, that you kind of, you're like, you forget about that. You forget about, you forgive the things that are wrong with it.
Yes.
Because it's so well executed.
Mostly because I've just come to realize the entire reason The Dark Knight works is because of Heath Ledger as the Joker.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
If he wasn't in the movie would be hot garbage like Dark Knight Rises was.
I believe that completely.
I know.
He's
Ricardo
the
would disagree.
Best
I would
part of the movie.
He is 100%. Yes. And so this scene is perfect. Well, it's perfect. It's also, as like a fan of Batman, it's a perfect like Joker thing.
Well, here's okay. I'm a fan of Batman.
Every element.
But I'm a fan of something else more than I'm a fan of Batman, and that is
Michael Mann.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. It's also the best version of Christopher Nolan's Michael Mann wank off that he could do.
Did you notice that? Did you notice that in Interstellar there's a character named Man?
I still haven't seen Interstellar.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, there's a character named Man. Oh,
okay. Well, that makes sense. I'm surprised there's not an Arthur or like a Clark. And they run into Stanley K, because he's not subtle about it.
No,
which
no.
is fine.
No,
wait, he's not subtle about what?
About his influences.
Yeah, about his love for Michael Mann. He loves Michael Mann.
Yeah, like especially like in, I always think of in The Dark Knight, there's the helicopter shot before the Joker hijacks, before he's going after.
It's so Michael Mann-ish. It's like blue. It's like.
Well, no, but he also uses the same, like, as in Heat, it's the same helicopter shot on a truck with the.
Yeah.
Which is just the Joker's theme, that like kind of strung out atonal, like uncomfortable pitch. But still, it's he was. I'm sure like Hans Zimmer had that thing, and he's like, "Fuck, now I can do Heat."
Yeah.
But that opening scene, especially seeing it, because I had to go see stupid I Am Legend to go see this scene.
Me too.
Which I enjoyed the first half of I Am Legend. Mm-hmm. Then it goes off the rails. But this scene in IMAX, just the boom of that the first glass. Shot. The first shot on the skyscraper before the guys like blow through it to like rappel down towards the bank. Like I remember audible gasps in the theater when it opens up on that. It's just insane. The sound design, everything about it, the way the scene is built. It's just, and it is, I do probably love it because it's such a pure Joker thing. Like the idea that he would convince each member of the gang to kill like the other member of the gang to leave just him there is awesome, hilarious, and he is just, the reveal of him is so good.
Yeah.
He even does a gas thing where, like, you're not sure if it's, like, the Joker gas, you know, from the cartoon or the comics where it leaves people
with, laughing
like,
just
leaves people with like,
a smile.
The frozen smile. Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's a nice, like, throwaway to that, you know, if anything. Oh, it's so good.
And it's a perfect Michael Mann.
Yes.
Tribute.
Yes. Going back to that, it is the perfect Michael Mann tribute.
Yeah.
It's Michael Mann could have guest directed that sequence.
Yeah.
And you would not have known the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been cool, though. Man.
There probably would have been an extra, like, the Joker would have wrapped his arms around one of the gang guys.
Yeah. And he'd
give him a kiss on the cheek or something.
Yeah. It won't do it.
Well, it would have been the kiss of death, but it would have been a kiss nonetheless.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, man. Michael Mann. There's an article I posted on my Facebook. It's about Michael Mann.
I didn't see that.
Check it out. I'll tweet it as well. That's a good... it was definitely on my honorable mentions. I didn't want to be the guy to bring up
everyone
Michael Mann through Dark Knight.
It's just everyone talks about The Dark Knight, so I'm really nervous about talking about it ever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. Where are we at?
We're number one.
We're number one.
No, wait, you're number two.
My number two.
Did you do your number two yet?
No. Okay. My number two is from 2010. And it's another talkie movie. It's The Social Network.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Interesting.
I love this opening.
I didn't rewatch it. I should.
It's a good
I
opening, should've. But for your number two favorite opening,
yeah,
that surprises me.
Yeah. Because it's just, A, it establishes who everybody is. Again.
Establishes who one person is.
Well, yeah, clearly. Yeah.
Because there's two people in the scene.
Yeah.
And but one person goes away.
Very clearly. And you see where his thought process is, and it establishes story and character, and done in like a amazingly executed Shakespearean, like just the way like the words are flowing out of people's mouths, and also the way he's going.
I can't sit here and let you compare Aaron Sorkin to Shakespeare.
I will. And this opening scene, I read this scene on paper because I was like, I want to see how it looks on paper.
No, I know.
And it's amazing because not only are they talking about what they're talking about, but they're also talking about metaphors, but they're also talking about things that moments, three moments before that. Do you mean like...
Right. Like no one... And I'm not saying what they're saying doesn't mean anything, but Sorkin is the king of having people talk really fast about a lot of stuff and having it... add up to something, even if it's not like the intended thing.
Yeah.
And he's famous for like, you know, a Western script would be like 75 pages. And so they would have to talk faster
in
order to fit it all in to the like 45 minutes.
Yeah. Well, in special features to the Blu-ray, like they say, the Fincher says he said how you, because the script was like 300 something pages.
Yeah.
And he said, shit, like they're not going to let me do a 3-hour movie. You know, he's like, how fast, why don't you read it into the recorder and tell me how fast it is? And I think his clocked in at exactly like almost 2 hours, I think, or
Social Network's longer than that. It's like 2.5.
Is it?
I mean, might be even 3.
No, it's 2.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow.
2 hours. And the way that he did it was he recorded himself talking at Aaron Sorkin pace, and it clocked in at that. And he's like, and he basically, Fincher broke down each scene, you know, of the recording, and he basically had the actors go that fast.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I'll be 2 hours.
And it sounds great.
Yeah. There's no like, it just go. I love it. Love this movie.
It's really good.
Yeah. And it just shows you like what you can, all the intensity. And I mean, David Fincher is really great at.
Well, they did it 75 times.
Yeah. Well, he's really good at like building up things and being intense and good at thrillers and stuff like that. But this movie is a courtroom drama. With nobody dying, nobody shooting a gun.
It's a procedural.
It's a procedural.
It's like Barbarians at the Gate.
And it's done in the style of a thriller. And it's amazing executed.
Yeah, so, it's really good. I'm just surprised it's your number 2.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll be surprised. Oh, you won't be surprised from number 1.
No. I will guess. I know exactly what it is.
What is your, your number 1 was Dark Knight, but you changed it. What is your new number? Well, your recap and your 1.
Okay. Okay, so my recap is 5, Scream, 4, The Lion King, 3, Inglourious Basterds, 2, Boogie Nights, and my number 1 is Trainspotting.
Ooh, yeah.
It's a good one. Yeah.
It's the long monologue of...
Choose life.
Yeah, Ewan McGregor. I have it right here if you want me to read it to you.
Read it to us.
Okay.
But you got to do the accent.
Yeah, you have to have a Scottish
accent.
Oh,
I can't do that.
I'm kidding.
I'll do the music in the background. Dun, dun,
dun, dun, yeah, dun, it's Iggy dun, Pop. Dun, 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 choose life. Dun, choose a job. Choose a career. Choose a family. Choose a fucking big television.
Like
choose
Sorkin
washing
speed.
Machines. Yeah, I'm doing it. I'm not an actor. Choose washing machines, cars, compact displayers, and electric tin openers. Choose good health, low cholesterol, and dental insurance. Choose fixed interest mortgage repayments. Choose a starter home. Choose your friends. Choose leisure wear and matching luggage. Choose a 3-piece suit on hire purchase and a range of fucking fabrics. Choose DIY and wondering who the fuck you are on Sunday morning. Choose sitting on that couch watching mind-numbing, spirit-crushing game shows, stuffing fucking junk food into your mouth. Choose rotting away at the end of it all, pissing your last in a miserable home. Nothing more than an embarrassment to the selfish, fucked up brats who you spawn to replace yourselves. Choose your future, choose life. But why would I want to do a thing like that? I choose not to choose life. I choose something. I choose something else. And the reasons? There are no reasons. Who needs reasons when you got heroin?
Yes. That's a great opening.
Really want heroin?
Yeah. Now I want heroin.
That's great.
No, and also like, it's that voiceover with like them getting chased, him and Sick Boy, Johnny Lee Miller,
Iggy Pop's "Lust for Life."
Yeah,
is the song.
I'm sorry, people know that by now.
Yeah, well,
I was singing it,
not the way you were singing it.
It was perfect.
They needed to know the title. Okay,
yeah. Listen, I know you're trying to not, you know, but it, come on, it was perfect.
But it is quite magnificent.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Ugh.
He falls after being hit in the head with the soccer ball at the same time he falls from the heroin dose.
Yeah.
And that's like the end of the opening.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Yeah. Danny Boyle is really good at that. Like kind of like his transitions are pretty interesting always.
Yeah.
He picks that and Slumdog Millionaire has the same thing. Like, well, mostly all his movies, but he's really good at those transitional scenes. I dig. Some directors are not. They're very, like, by the books, but he takes risks.
He's good at maintaining a level of energy.
Yeah, yeah.
And movement in the movie.
I'm curious to see what he does.
Even
with,
if the movie isn't very good.
With Jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Because he'll have a Aaron Sorkin script. But
yeah.
That'd be interesting.
They're still making that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael Fassbender is...
I don't know. That last one...
Michael Fassbender is not good at his
We did a whole podcast, but what was his last one with Rosario Dawson and...
the heist movie.
Yeah.
I forgot what it's called.
It was like the R1.
Yeah, but it was Full Frontal. I remember that.
It was not good, though.
Yeah. All right. That's a good fucking opening. All right. Good number
really
one.
Good opening.
What is your recap and your number one?
My recap. It's 9/11, guys. My recap is number 5, Weigh the Gun. Number four, Up. Number three, There Will Be Blood. Number two, The Dark Knight. And number one is Manhattan.
Mm. Ooh.
For me, the most beautiful opening, the most iconic. When I think of New York, this is what I think of. I mean, I've been in New York, whatever, but it's this, like the black and white, what he's saying in the opening, it's perfect. The rhythm and blue, the Gershwin.
Yeah.
You know, any season, New York will always be in black and white, you know, the tunes of Gershwin. It's incredible. I mean, every single shot, and it's, you know, like maybe 45 different shots of New York, like in the opening sequence.
Yeah.
Each one is perfect.
This is good. This is some good stuff here.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I can just watch this on repeat. I never get sick. The true test of this is that I used to fly United constantly. I still love Rhythm and Blue.
Hmm.
It's the United theme.
Yeah.
So everyone, no one likes it anymore.
That was Rhapsody in Blue.
Oh, Rhapsody in Blue. Sorry. I always do that. Rhythm and Blue. Yeah, Rhapsody in Blue.
Who's confused now?
I love Gershwin.
Now I am.
Sorry.
No, it is. Yeah, Rhapsody in Blue. Also an amazing sequence in Fantasia 2000. They do a Rhapsody in Blue.
I've never seen it. I don't like Fantasia.
I don't like Fantasia. It makes me feel gross.
Holy shit. Both of you are weird. Well, first of all, it's weird to say it makes you feel gross.
Yeah, it makes me feel
Fantasia amazing. Scared Jenny, me when I was a kid. Scared me as a kid.
Okay,
never
well,
want to see
you
it.
You know, you're an adult now.
I haven't watched it again. I think it's still.
You know,
scare
you're an
me.
Adult now, and movies
the
are fake.
Brooms have arms.
That scared you?
I don't know what scared me. I just didn't like it. It was scary.
You don't even know what scared you.
I'll tell you.
I've only seen it like twice, and both times I was like, I hate this. I think also when I was a kid, I like didn't like when things didn't have words. You know.
That's fair. No, kids are dumb.
Yeah.
No, well, it's fine.
I'm not dumb.
No, sure. No, but I would
kids,
like
in general.
I'm a kid. I don't want to watch a silent film.
Yeah.
What are you kidding me?
No. I didn't like songs that didn't have words in them either.
Instrumentals?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Classical music?
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird thing to say for a fan of Gershwin.
I like Gershwin now, but when I was a kid.
Yeah, she grew to love him.
I only liked Porgy and Bess.
My piano teacher made me play classical, and it was the worst.
Oh, here we go. Now we're getting down into it.
Yeah. Probably hit her hand with the rulers. Bam. Don't.
Yeah.
But yeah, Manhattan's great. Gordon Willis. Is Gordon Willis also the cinematographer of Annie Hall? I think it is, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I feel like Manhattan was the first thing he did with Woody Allen.
Maybe you're right. But all right. So that is your number one.
It is my number one.
Okay. My number one is... my recap, sorry. My recap is number
five. And then
five.
Can I guess?
Yeah. My number five is Narc. Four, Punch Drunk Love. 3, Kill Bill. 2, The Social Network. And my number 1?
Michael Mann's Heat.
No.
No?
Michael Mann's Heat is really cool, but it's not as powerful as Children of Men.
Oh, of course. Of course.
But you put
I'm an
that
idiot.
As the example.
I know. But that's my number 1.
Yeah.
Such a cheater.
I'm an idiot. I should, of course, it's Children of Men.
That's what inspired the idea for the opening.
It is an amazing opening.
It is. It's great. Yeah. But that's why I didn't put it on my list.
Oh, well, that's why I'm using it. I figured no one would use it because I put it in an example. So,
Jenny, The Sorcerer's Apprentice isn't here. You can calm down.
I will never watch that movie.
It's really good, guys.
Or 2000.
The Sorcerer's Apprentice?
In Fantasia.
Oh, I thought you meant the actual movie The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
No.
With Jay Baruchel.
That's terrible.
I think I've seen that, actually.
That's scarier than Fantasia.
No, I saw Percy Jackson. I think I get those two confused. They're kind of similar.
Percy Jackson and
no,
Sorcerer's
I think I
Apprentice?
Seen both. Never mind. It's not important.
Or Percy
Tell
Jackson and Fantasia.
Nicolas Cage.
I don't know anymore.
Sorcerer's Apprentice has Nicolas Cage.
I think I've seen that one, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I've seen Percy Jackson as well. But that's not important.
It's important. One of them is good. One.
It's important to know what...
Are either of them good?
It's important to know what was your other choice when you chose to watch Percy Jackson.
They made a sequel to Percy Jackson. They didn't make a sequel to The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
That's true.
Yet they probably wanted
at
to.
Home. I could only watch what was on HBO.
Well, that was. I think Sorcerer's Apprentice was the first of like Bruckheimer's downfall.
Yeah.
Yeah, because his last like three have not been good.
Yeah.
Or have not made money.
I still love National Treasure.
National Treasure.
Oh,
awesome.
I love National Treasure.
National Treasure is a shit, dude.
It's a book of secrets.
Yeah.
Every president gets one.
I think I overheard that they just started the 6th Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh. Well, they haven't started it, but they're...
Is it the 6th one?
Cast
is that
no,
right?
It's the 5th one.
5th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's the 5th one. It's supposedly going to be around Orlando Bloom's character.
Is it the same?
A weird and terrible decision.
Is it the Contiki guys though? The guys that directed Contiki?
Oh, who is that? I don't remember.
The two guys. I don't remember their names, but
that I think so. I think you're right.
If it is, I'm a little interested, but that's about it.
No. Nothing.
Yeah.
I don't care about Caribbean.
Who cares? I'm just done with Johnny Depp. I'm done with him. I want him to just play someone who doesn't have a weird accent or a weird mask.
Just one.
Or hair.
I just want him to give me one that's like...
Give me one more. What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Well, they tried with Transcendence. That's not his fault.
No, that was Wally... What's his face?
Fister.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that
Rear
means.
Window.
Yeah. Rear Window.
Or the window one. Secret Window.
Secret Window.
Oh, yeah.
He's regular in that one.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
My favorite Johnny Depp movie?
And it's not good either.
Ed Wood.
Mordecai.
Ed Wood.
Ugh. Mordecai.
Son of a bitch.
Mordecai.
No, Ed Wood is perfect.
Yeah. But Children of Men is my number one. Okay, so we got to talk about Children of Men.
Back to Children of Men.
I love Children of Men.
Yeah.
Oh, opening scene is one continuous take. He walks out of the coffee shop. He puts booze in his coffee. He keeps going, keeps walking, and the coffee shop he was just in explodes. Still one take. The camera pushes in. And there's a girl without an arm.
Everyone's heard us talk about this because we did a whole thing on Alfonso Cuarón.
Mm-hmm.
And the high-pitched sound.
Yeah.
That's my thing. It was the first movie I saw after I hurt my ear, and I have tinnitus, so I always hear that ringing in my right ear. And I saw that, and I was like, yeah, that's what it is. Only Julianne Moore's full shit doesn't go away.
Yeah.
It dies down. Doesn't go away, though.
Ugh.
Ever?
No, it's still there.
I mean, but like for him, it would never go away for that guy. What's
Probably
his not. Name?
An explosion like that?
Clive Owen?
I mean, mine was
Clive Owen.
Mine was a gun that I was shooting. An explosion? I don't know. That's
loud.
I don't know. It's really loud. An explosion is very loud.
Yeah.
Have you ever done crazy. The, what is it? The, like a dry ice bomb?
No. Oh, that's loud.
Yeah. Think of how loud that is.
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh,
yeah.
It's loud. Yeah. It's way louder.
But you just like
than
always
think
hear that
is.
Noise now.
Yeah.
If you just ever are near a bomb or something.
Yeah. It's a detector. No.
Yeah.
You constantly hear all
that.
He's like, there's a bomb
nearby.
It gets loud.
My ears tingling.
It's not all bad. It gets louder when I'm around bombs.
Yeah.
you'd be a great superhero. Yeah. You're like, oh,
sure.
Or work for the police or something, but whatever.
You'd be like a
I just have to get really close to the danger.
Yeah.
Like a bomb sniffing dog.
Like the Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bomb hearing dog.
Yeah. Bomb hearing man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm like the Hurt Locker, except I'm just like crouching down with my ear next to the wheel well trying to figure out where the bomb is.
Like, guys, it's right here, guys. I'm gonna go take a fiver. That's all you do, you just locate them.
Yeah, that'd be a sweet gig.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to get a Pepsi.
No, that's not how it works. In fact, how it works is it's totally silent in your bedroom and you just hear ringing all the time.
Really?
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. You tune it out, though. It's very zen.
Do you have to like listen to music all the time or something?
No, you actually... This is getting way into it, but it actually becomes kind of an interesting thing where you learn... It actually impacts other parts of your life where you learn how to phase things out. Because it's a thing that's always there, but your body gets used to it.
Is that how you phase me out?
Yeah. But your body gets used to it, so it becomes a constant thing. So, like, let's say, like, all of a sudden your hand started twitching all the time, like your right hand just started shaking back and forth. After a while, that's just your
Part
hand.
Of you.
That's
yeah.
just your hand again,
yeah.
right? And your body learns to, like, balance it so it never feels like your hand is shaking. It just always is.
Got it.
And that can kind of filter into other parts of your life, which is how I zone Ricardo out when he's talking about how great, I don't know, whatever thing we're just disagreeing on was.
Ugh, too much.
Yeah, yeah. Predator? Yep.
No, I love Predator.
Predator is amazing.
I'm just tired of...
Could be a great opening. Just saying. But yeah, Children of Men, amazing. It's Emmanuel Lubezki, cinematographer. It's a lot of those one-takers that feel mm-hmm. almost like it gives it a documentary feel, but it isn't shaky cam. It's not shaky cam. It's something else that I really enjoy. It's a really lived-in... world that we mm-hmm. see. We've talked about it in the Cuarón episode, but I love it. It's amazing.
It's really great. One of the best.
Yeah. Any other honorable mentions before we sign off? The Matrix?
Yeah, that was my number one honorable mention.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, I just remember seeing The Matrix, and I had never seen anything. Like, I had no idea what was happening.
Yeah.
Because you had
yeah.
never seen anything like it before.
No.
So really. It starts off like the green, the music,
and then the lighting,
telephone thing. Yeah, like everything, like the costume design, everything about it.
I also picked, it's a movie from this year. You haven't seen it, but I think Jenny has, Whiplash. The opening of Whiplash.
What's the opening of it?
It's just the drums. And then, it fades in and it's him.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I had Goodfellas.
Yep.
It's a great opening.
Yep.
The Player. I thought someone would say it. It's not, I mean, it's good.
It's a movie that I liked when I was younger.
It's the classic, like, single shot, you know, thing.
It's, I mean, really, if you really want to talk about that, that's where, I mean, Paul Thomas Anderson got. That he's very influenced by
Altman.
By Altman,
yeah,
and you know, that's I'm sure that was an inspiration.
I mean, if Adam was here, I'll go ahead and say 8.5.
Yeah,
he'd say 8.5.
Yeah,
he would. Dream sequence.
Halloween.
Yeah,
you find out. Oh, it's the
that
kid.
Is a good opening sequence. Halloween. Yeah, that is really good.
Yeah,
I'm sure. 2001.
Yep.
I'm
sure Adam would have had a lot of horror stuff on there.
He would have had a lot of horror stuff, probably. I don't have much horror on here. I had The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yep.
Just like the intro cards for each person being the opening sequence.
Yeah.
Just that scene. I think we may... I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast, but the scene where Van Cleef is at the guy's house and they're eating like whatever that thing is
like
that
stew
they're eating.
Or something.
Yeah, it's like some weird stew. It also kind of looks like a pasta somehow, like maybe like a... Like a ravioli stew or something. Like, I don't know what it is, but
I want some.
It just looks really good every time I watch it.
Yeah, and you know, like the what if there's beef in it, it's gonna be delicious.
Oh yeah,
because
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yep. Well,
probably out of Indiana everything Jones, we talked about, the most iconic opening scene.
Yeah. Also, do you even like Temple of Doom opening's pretty iconic?
Yeah, to a way lesser extent than Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
You've seen the boulder thing, done. You know,
but I'm saying they're all fun like that. Really
sure.
good,
yeah,
cool
yeah.
like.
Yeah, openings. Les Crusade. Yeah, with the River Phoenix, it's a little belabored and it's not as good, but it's still really fun.
What?
Grand Budapest Hotel's on HBO Go.
Oh yeah, you haven't seen it?
No.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, that
she's got to get on that.
That's, I know. I'm really behind.
That's in my 14. Top 5 of the year for sure.
Whoa, spoilers.
Whoa, spoilers, dude. No spoilers for the next episode.
Sorry, I'm just
dude.
Getting him a tease.
What else? Anything else you want to mention before we sign off?
Once Upon a Time in the West is really good.
Fuck yeah.
I had Sullivan's Travels.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Everything else we talked about. Clockwork Orange, pretty much any Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah, yeah. But there you go. That's our list. Jenny, you have anything else you want to throw
that
out?
That was it. That was it.
All right, you can find us. And stay tuned. We're going to have our next few episodes will be we'll probably first do a 2015 movie preview. Well, we'll go over like our most anticipated films of the year coming up. And then at the end of the month of January, we'll post our top 10. Probably the last week so we give everybody some time to watch some movies they haven't seen. And we'll post our top 10 of the year, which I'm excited about. I'm getting to see a lot of the stuff I missed.
Yeah. Right now I'm playing catch up on a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Catch
up. And so stay tuned. And you can find us on Twitter at The Film Podcast. You can find us on our website at thefilmpodcast.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Ricardo, ULTRERES.
I'm at Janae, JEHNEIGH.
At BL Bennett.
All right, and that's it, I guess. Until next time, have a good week.